Welcome to the Josh Wright Piano Podcast. Today we're going to be answering a question from Sophie, and she said the following in her email. Maybe one day you can talk about how you built your technique since you were so young, so that you wouldn't need as much practice time right now, so that you can balance other areas of your life. Good luck with the video releasing, and thanks for the inspiration. So thanks for your kind message, Sophie. The funny thing is the better you get at piano, the more practice time you actually need, not to maintain things, but to continue to grow. So the first thing I would say is if I'm preparing for a concert now, I'm most likely practicing much harder than I did when I was younger, mostly because my own expectations of myself are a lot higher than they were. Even though I had high expectations when you're younger, you just learn more and you know what to look for in your pieces, and you hear smaller, finer details. So I don't necessarily think that's an accurate representation of where I'm at right now. I feel like I need to practice even more now, mostly because I'm more perfectionistic now than I was when I was younger. But what you are asking in your question is, how do you build a good technique to last throughout your lifetime, so that if there are times in your life where things get a little bit neglected at the piano, that you don't lose all your technique? And how do you develop a really strong technique from a young age? I do really like helping my students set up a strong technical foundation through basic exercises first, things like Schmidt preparatory exercises, Hannon exercises, Czerny exercises. The Czerny exercises that I usually focus on are Opus 599 if they're just getting started out. That gives me an opportunity. Those exercises are so easy that it gives me an opportunity to teach them a lot about shaping and voicing and maybe a bit of rubato, along with basic fundamentals like hand position and basic technique and clean releases and things like that. And then Czerny Opus 299 is quite a bit harder than the Opus 599, and those are really great to give your students after they've done other technical skills, like going through all their scales, arpeggios, triads, and seventh chords. So many people were asking me how I taught those that I actually made a mini course called the Pro Practice Technique Series, if you want to check that out. That goes over all scales, arpeggios, triads, and seventh chords that I teach in my lessons. I mean, it's all the major and minor ones, and then five types of seventh chords and four types of triads. I know there's other types of scales like the modal scales, but we don't do that in that course. We just go over major and minor harmonic scales. And after that, that Czerny Opus 299 is really helpful because it applies a lot of those skills that we just went over with those four core fundamental skills of scales, arpeggios, triads, and seventh chords, and applies that in these miniature pieces that don't get too complex so far as key areas or chromaticism. It's not absolute insanity. There are some chromatic things in them, but I'm not saying it's like reading through a thick Rachmaninoff score or Chopin score where there's a lot of chromatic harmony and you're modulating all over the place. For the most part, those pieces stick to a pretty straightforward harmonic plan. So beyond that, what other exercise books did I use? My teacher went over Wieck, W-I-E-C-K. She used that as a way to teach me a lot about artistry. So if you just pick up a copy of Wieck, you're probably not going to get very much out of it. It really does take a good teacher to help you understand what he was going for and some possibilities of things that you could explore. She also gave me Exercises for the Independence of the Fingers by Isidore Philippe, P-H-I-L-I-P-P. And if you don't have medium to large sized hands, I would not recommend those exercises because I've seen a student get tendonitis once and I was like, yep, I'm done. I'm not ever teaching that again to students with smaller hands. It has you. In these, diminished seventh chords with the octave. And then it'll have you do things like, and then you go to the next one. And then and so forth. And they have you do just tons of different patterns. I'm pulling that out of the hat. I don't even know if he goes over that one, but it would be something like that. Those can be helpful, and they can also be detrimental. If you're using a lot of tension in order to achieve those results, it's going to be very detrimental to your technique. But if you're using them as a way to gain independence in the fingers, like in La Campanella, for instance, there's this passage where the right hand has to trill on the bottom of the hand, and the top of the hand is doing that. Those exercises set me up for success with passages like that, where the hand has to independently be doing other things. However, I don't think you absolutely have to have Philippe in order to develop those skills. If you have a good teacher and they can help you case by case basis, that's another way of doing it. But I did find those exercises very fun and helpful. The next thing that I would say is after, and you don't have to go through all those books. I just named a bunch of books and different things. I would absolutely go through all your scales, arpeggios, triads, and seventh chords. Those are core foundational elements. And I think the other books I mentioned are very valuable. Otherwise, I wouldn't have mentioned them. Those are the ones that I personally went through. There's many others. There's like Dokonani, Brahms, Pishna. There's Microcosmos by Bartok. There are so many different books that have been used as exercises. But beyond fundamentals, I'm a really big fan of doing what my teacher did with me, which is using pieces to continue to develop your technique. So I remember I took her a couple of Chopin etudes that she assigned me. And after I did two, I was listening to the whole CD by Murray Pariah. And I said, I want to do all of these. She's like, oh, okay. I was 13, and somehow she believed in me enough to do it. And we spent the next year learning all the Chopin etudes. And then we were working on other stuff the following year, but I spent the following maybe 9 months, I would guess, recording all of the Chopin etudes. And you can hear that very old recording from when I was 14 and 15 years old. I was not nearly as talented as Long or, you know, some of these very young children that play all the etudes that whip through them. I mean, mine are quite slow in a lot of them, but that was such a foundational project for me to develop a fairly comprehensive technique. I'm still, to this day, I'm 33 now, and I'm still learning so much all the time about technique, which is why piano is so much fun, is it always keeps you guessing. But we really did just transition to working on pieces after a basic foundational technique was achieved. And now I'll still sometimes ask, you know, any three of my teachers a technical question here and there, like how do you handle this or how do you teach this? Sometimes I'm asking them technical questions to help with my students just because I've run out of ideas on how to teach a particular idea. I've exhausted all the things that I do in my own practice, and if it's still not working for the student, I'll usually seek advice elsewhere. And that's something, maybe that's a good theme for this podcast, is never be too arrogant or close-minded to, you know, ask for help. I ask so many people questions. If I notice that someone is really good at something, I'll always ask them. We're going to have my friend Andrew Stopey on at some point on my YouTube channel to talk about memorizing, because he memorizes an insane amount of repertoire. My friend Elizabeth Schumann, she has some of the, well, she's just an amazing musician all around, but her octaves, her repeated octaves in particular, like her Earl King, was one of the most amazing things I ever saw. And so I asked her how she focuses on octaves, and she was nice enough to even let me share that in a YouTube video. So there's some extra tips in there, on YouTube if you need help with octaves. And so I'm always, I just feel like I'm a great collector of knowledge. I myself am somewhat talented, but I just am surrounded by really brilliant people that have helped me so much, with all of these different things, which is why I'm able to share things here on this podcast and also on my YouTube channel because of the generosity of others in sharing with me. So, Sophie, I hope that answers your question. I would absolutely start with some foundational elements of technique, and then I would absolutely move on to and you could absolutely classify scales, arpeggios, triads, seventh chords as foundational, but do all of those for sure. Then you could go to some more advanced exercises, but fairly quickly after that, I would like to see you transitioning into repertoire that continues to challenge you technically and help you develop further as a musician, so that you can become a well-rounded musician. Also, we have such a limited time in this life to learn as much repertoire as we want. We'll probably never play all the repertoire we want to play. Even these people with giant repertoire, probably repertoires don't have enough time to learn everything that they want. So I don't think that it's a great idea to be spending, you know, hours a day on warm-ups. I just saw a documentary with Argerich, just a little clip of one, and they said, how much do you practice scales a day? She's like, never. And Dmitry Levkovich said the same thing in an interview with my friend Jolt Bognar on Living the Classical Life is what the series is called. He said, how do you practice scales every day? He's like, I never do. He's like, why would I do that when my pieces are full of scales and my pieces are challenging me in unique ways? And I think that's very, very key. I always like to give examples of things I personally either struggled with or recently overcome. B major scale is the easiest scale on the piano. I've never had trouble with it. But in this little place, in the Chopin Concerto, for some reason, that's just a B major scale, but that was giving me trouble. Now, it is flying. It's going really fast, but at the top there, my hand kept wanting to pull out for some reason. So I had to just practice keeping the hand in for those black keys, and it fixed fairly quickly. It wasn't a big deal, but I was like, oh my gosh, I've been playing for 28 years, and that particular scale in that particular instance gave me a little bit of trouble for a few days. And I was like, why is that happening? And it just goes to show you that just practicing a straight B major scale, hands together, one octave apart, isn't enough. You actually need to get into the different situations. And then there was other parts in that piece that I thought, oh my gosh, this is gonna absolutely kill me. Which, after, you know, a few days of practicing that, it feels super buttery and smooth in the hand. Which I originally thought, oh my gosh, that's going to absolutely be a nightmare. And it wasn't tough at all. And so you just never know what is going to challenge you. And that's why it's so important to not overspend time on basic exercises and to actually get in the thick of it with the pieces you actually want to play. Now, if all you ever want to play is Chopin nocturnes and slow pieces, then maybe you do dedicate a little bit more time to some technical exercises each day. But if you're playing technical works along with lyrical works, then I would absolutely maybe stick to 20 to 30 minutes a day tops with your exercises. And once you reach a really proficient level, I don't do any technical exercises anymore. I might, you know, throw a scale down here and there just to get my fingers limbered up, but that's about it. And then I'm working on pieces. And generally I start, this is just a little extra bonus tip, I guess. I start practicing each day with the hardest material. If I have to memorize something, or if something went bad in a performance the previous day, or if I am worried about a certain passage, I'll just sit down and work on that very first. And so I'm getting the hardest work done when my mind is the most fresh. And that has seemed to be a very good strategy, because, and then I'll work on things progressively easier and easier throughout the practice session. So by the end of the practice session, I'm playing through larger sections that don't, I mean, yes, I'm still focused. It's not like I'm brain dead by the end of my practice session, but you know, I'm playing through larger sections, or I'm playing through easier pieces on a program that I'm preparing at the end of the practice session, or I'm just reviewing things at the end of the session. I'm doing the hardest work first, and then I'll go to somewhat easier work, maybe a whole section individually in small pieces felt good, but the whole section wasn't feeling as good. So I'll play through that And I'll dissect that in new and unique ways and identify problem spots. And then toward the end of my practice session, things get more broad and generalized, because you do need that. That was a mistake I made many times in my life, is just practicing because I wanted to be a good, obedient, diligent student, I only ever practiced in tiny little sections. And, you know, maybe once a day I'd play through my piece. And my teacher at Michigan, I kept messing up in these studio classes. And he's like, Josh, you're so polished on every little thing, but you have these like little random pauses in your, you know, performances that I can't figure out because they're not ever consistent. You don't mess up in the same spot every time. I was like, I know, I can't figure it out. He's like, well, how much are you playing through stuff? And I was like, oh, once a day, if that, you know, I'm mostly just working small sections. And he's like, you need to start playing through your piece several times a day. Now, most people listening to this podcast do not need that advice. I can already tell you that much. You guys are all playing through your pieces way too much and you're not dissecting it enough. But if you do fall in that crazy OCD camp like I do of, you know, only dissecting things down because you want to be as efficient as possible, you do need to spend some time playing through stuff. So that's usually what I'll reserve for the end of my practice sessions, is more playing through. It's also good when your mind is a bit more tired or your hands are cold or, you know, you're stressed out or you're super calm or whatever emotion, different emotions that you can put in to your practice sessions when you're doing playthroughs. That also helps, because when you get to the concert, you will have experienced a wide variety of emotions when you're playing through things. So just another little tip there that I like to tell my students. If any of you have any questions that you'd like me to cover on this podcast, my email is josh@joshwrightpiano.com. Make sure to put podcast in the subject line of your email. If you're not subscribed to the podcast or my YouTube channel, I would be very grateful if you did. It helps with the algorithms or ratings or whatever makes this be more visible to other people. So I appreciate that. I'll also leave a link in the description below has links for a free webinar, two of my paid courses, and then a link to my kit, which contains all the gear that I use to record these podcasts, as well as everything I use to record my YouTube videos, and also helpful books and other gear recommendations that I really like. I hope that helps. If any of you have any questions, again, my email is josh@joshwrightpiano.com. Have a great week. Good luck in your practice sessions.